Good evening. Need I introduce, at the piano, the well-known pianist, composer, linguist, also contains lanolin, Donald Swan. I must be Michael Flanders. We write songs. Donald Swan here writes the music, I write the words. Some of these songs you may possibly have heard in reviews at Glyndebourne and so on. Others you're less likely to have heard unless you've patronised this Palace of Culture before.
They all have.
They're the ones we write that we like to sing ourselves. That's what we're still going to do. We feel we're following this trend towards simplification in the theatre, as you know. There have been reviews without scenery, been reviews without costume. And this is a review without scenery, without costume, except what Moss Bros has very kindly loaned to us. Even without a cast, which does make everything very much easier, we find also cheaper. This at the back here, I draw your attention to, is not a curtain. It's a photograph of a curtain by Tony Armstrong Jones. Welcome from both of us to our farrago. Eke out our imperfections with your thoughts, to coin a phrase. Think when we talk of horses that you see them printing their proud hoofs in the receiving earth. Don't think we do actually talk of horses. This song isn't about horses. This one is about buses. Well, buses we've all seen. Great big red things rushing about. We had one outside here, actually, about 20 minutes ago. Did you see it?
I did, yes.
With private on it, looking very lost. I can remember when it was a general. This was a long... If you laugh and applaud, it means you're terribly old and we have to go terribly slowly for that. Omnibus, my friend Mr. Swan informs me, comes from the Latin omnibus, meaning to or for, by, with or from everybody, which is a very good description. This song is about a bus. It's wittily subtitled, I thought of this, A Transport of Delight.
Some people like a motorbike, some say a tram for me, or for Bonnie, or me Lonnie, they'd lay them down and dee. Such means of locomotion seem rather dull to us,
the driver
and conductor of a London omnibus. Hold but it tight, please, ting ting. Hold but it tight, please, ting ting. When you are lost in London and you don't know where you are, you'll hear my voice a-calling both further down the car. And very soon you'll find yourself inside the terminus, in a London Transport diesel engine, 97 horsepower omnibus.
Along the Queen's Great Highway, I drive my merry-load at 20 miles per hour in the middle of the road.
They like to drive in convoys, we're most gregarious. The big six-wheeler scarlet painted in a London Transport diesel engine, 97 horsepower omnibus. Earth has not anything to show more fair.
Mind the stairs.
Earth has not anything to show more fair.
Any more fair. When cabbies try to pass me before they overtakes, I sticks me flipping hand out and I jams on all me brakes.
Them jackal taxi drivers can only swear and cuss behind that monarch of the road,
observer of the highway code,
that big six-wheeler,
scarlet paint,
London Transport
diesel engine,
97 horsepower omnibus.
I stops when I'm requested, although it spoils the ride, so we can shout,
get out of it, we're full right up inside. We don't ask much for wages, we only want fair shares. So cut down all the stages and stick up all the fares. If tickets cost £1 a piece, why should you make a fuss? It's worth it just to ride inside,
30 foot long by 10 foot wide,
inside that monarch of the road,
observer of the highway code,
that big six-wheeler scarlet painted London Transport diesel engine, 97 horsepower omnibus. Hold but it take, please.
Recently been adopted as the marching song of the underground resistance movement. May we ask, could you hear that more or less all right at the top there? All right for quantity. It's nothing we can do about the quality at this stage. Not until Swan's voice breaks, anyway. People make an awful lot of fuss nowadays, don't they, about the quality of the sound they listen to. Have you noticed? and spend all that time trying to get the exact effect of an orchestra actually playing in their sitting room. Personally, I can't think of anything I should hate more than to have an orchestra actually playing in my sitting room. They seem to like it, and it's about them that we've written this next song. Mention this in case any of you think the title is perhaps a little near the bone. This is a song of reproduction.
I had a little gramophone. I'd wind it round and round, and with a sharpish needle it made a cheerful sound. And then they amplified it, it was much louder then. And you sharpen fiber needles to make it soft again. Today for reproduction, I'm as eager as can be. Count me among the faithful fans of high fidelity. High fidelity, hi-fi's the thing for me. With an LP disc, an FM set, and a corner reflex cabinet. High frequency range, complete with auto change. All the highest notes, neither sharp nor flat.
The ear can't hear as high as that.
Still, I ought to please any passing bat.
With my high fidelity.
Who made this circuit up for you, anyway? Bought it in a shop. Ooh, what a horrible shoddy job they fobbed you off with. Surprised they let you have it in this room anyway. The acoustics are all wrong. If you raise the ceiling 4 feet, put the fireplace from that wall to that wall, you still only get the stereophonic effect if you sit in the bottom of that cupboard. I see you've got your negative feedback coupled in with your push-pull input-output. Take that across through your Reddit pickup to your tweeter. If you're modding more than 8, you're going to get wow on your top. Try to bring that down through your preamp rumble filter to your woofer. What'll you get? Flutter on your bottom.
High fidelity, FFRR for me. I've an opera here that you shan't escape. On miles and miles of recording tape, high decibel gain is easy to obtain with the tone control at a single touch.
Bel canto sounds like double Dutch.
And I never did care for music much. It's a high fidelity.
This is perhaps a good moment to explain that we don't normally have these things standing around here, but tonight they are recording this stereophonically, in fact, for posterity. So wherever you're sitting now, that's where you'll be on the record. So. Sit up. Sit up. Sit up nice and straight. Any of you feel like rolling in the aisles or being carried out helpless with mirth, this is a jolly good night to do it. Do you want to say hello to posterity?
Hello!
Hello, posterity. We sort of move around a bit. They'll use it for demonstration purposes. It helps, you know. We've had a lot of luck with records. Some of the songs that have made our names a household word, like Slop Bucket, are the little series of animal songs that we've been writing, mostly for Ian Wallace, an artist we very much admire. We have several of his paintings at home. We're often asked how we write these songs, often asked why. It's not always easy to say exactly how the idea for a song first comes, but I can, as it happens, tell you how I first got the idea for this next song. I live in Kensington, naturally. Battersea. He calls it South Chelsea. Now, it's very... very much snobby for me. You turn left by Ponting's Dustbins. Scarsdale Villa, sort of decayed gentility. Very nice there, you know, open trees, all right, very happy there, smokeless. The road itself is a bit of a snag. That road has got the steepest camber on it, you know, the old slope, of any road in London. It's about 1 in 3. If you park your car by the pavement, as people do from time to time, the car's tilted like that. Well, now, that means you can only get this near side door open a little bit. Then the pavement stops it. You want to use this door, you're going to make a jump for it. bad enough all up and down the road, but just outside where I happen to live, 1A, of course it would be, it's just like the Great North Face of Everest. Things right over its side. You can't get this door open at all. You've got to keep it full of petrol or it shows empty. I can't use this door. I've got to get out, get to this thing. You see, on the pavement. Well, I wrote to the local council about this. Very nice about it. You know, elections coming up and so on. But then we have got a jolly decent lot of old burghers on our council. Get them sticking up flags on the town hall, I'll tell you that much. Then our council is, of course, strictly non-political. They're all conservatives. They took a bite out of the pavement. They didn't do it themselves. They sent a chap round. A chap with a chain round his neck. And there is just one spot now where I can drive up in a comparatively lordly fashion and get out very nicely. Thank you. Thanks to the borough engineer, you see. At least I could. But you know, every day when I get back from my daytime work with the submerged log company, I find another car has parked in that spot. Would you credit it? Always the same one, day after day, a great big, horrible, flashy thing with teeth. It's got an engine at both ends. Never seen the owner, just the car. I have done everything to shift it, you see me?
Oh.
I put little notes under the windscreen wiper saying, do not park here. You shall smart for this. I keep putting orange boxes out there, as you have to, you know. I'm fed up with oranges. I stick pins into wax models of his big end. There it is next day. Large as life, twice as large. It's not one of the neighbours. This chap, whoever he is, he comes for miles to park his car in that spot. Never get hold of it. Might be anybody. The whole of London might even be one of you. If anybody here tonight is in the habit of parking their car in Scarsdale Villas, might I ask you, would you leave it up the far end? Up at the Pembroke Arms, give it a treat. Not always bang outside 1A. Thank you very much. The number of this car, I'll never forget this number as long as I live. I've sat gazing at it for hours on end, sometimes, thinking of nothing else. Number is 346GNU. Here's another animal song. A year ago, last Thursday, I was strolling in the zoo when I met a man who thought he knew the lot. He was laying down the law about the habits of baboons and the number of quills a porcupine has got. So I asked him, what's that creature there? He answered, yeah, it's a helk. I might have gone on thinking that was true if the animal in question hadn't put that chap to shame and remarked, I ain't a helk, I'm a gnu. I'm a gnu, I'm a gnu, the nicest worker of nature in the zoo. I'm a gnu, how do you do? You really ought to know wahoos wahoo. I'm a gnu, spelt G-N-U. I'm not a camel or a kangaroo. So let me introduce, I'm neither man or moose. So gnu, 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 I'm a gnu. I had taken furnished lodgings down at Rustington-on-Sea, whence I travelled on to Ashton-under-Lyme, it was actually. And the second night I stayed there, I was wakened from a dream, which I'll tell you all about some other time. Among the hunting trophies on the wall above my bed, stuffed and mounted, was a face I thought I knew. A bison. No, it's not a bison. An okapi. It's unlikely, really. Could it be a hearty beast? Then I seemed to hear a voice. I'm a gnu. I'm a gnu. Another gnu. I wish I could gnash my teeth at you. I'm a gnu. How do you do? You really ought to know wahoos wahoo. I'm a gnu, spelt G-N-U. Call me bison or a copy and I'll sue. Gnor am I in the least like that dreadful hearty beast. Oh, gnu, gnu, gnu. Gano, 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 I'm a gano. Gano, 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 I'm a gano.
Very nice of you.
Donald and I have made quite a study of popular music over the last few years, and we've noticed that songs that include foreign phrases are nearly always hits. You think there have been hundreds of them. There was Volare, Que Sera Sera, and further back, Auf Wiedersehen, my dear. What was the other one? Arrivederci, darling, is my advice to you. All this... All these and many more have become hits. Now, we'd very much like to write a hit, wouldn't we,
John? Yes.
You know, we've got to think of our old age and so on. And we'd like to write a song of this kind, too, but when we looked into it, we found so many of these phrases have been used. But I think we've managed to find one that hasn't. And here, in our bid for the hit parade, is the song we've built round it.
Oh, it's hard to say. Holy makiti look at chi chi chi. But in Tonga that means no. If I ever have the money, tis to Tonga I shall go. For each lovely Tonga maiden there will gladly make a date. And by the time she said, holy ma kitty, look at chi chi chi, it is usually too late.
No, I don't think so, really, do you? Now, I think it's probably very much easier if you want to write a hit, just to stick to the old Moon and June. We tried that, too. We tried our own variation on that highly unoriginal theme, like this.
It's a satellite moon. It's a plagiarized tune. That duck on the lake's a decoy. There's a sodium glare in the purified and the girl in my arms is Mabel Figworthy, and if she says, oh really, once more, I shall break her neck.
We feel that in this time. What the world really needs most of all is not a lot of spite. You've got enough spite in the world. But another simple, happy chorus song. Well, why not? Something in which all can join for a change, something which expresses the feelings of all the ordinary people all over the world. I think we found such a song. And it's called This is a chorus song. Please join in. Very interesting, actually. We originally thought of calling this song. We thought this sounded rather stupid. Song we feel very much for our time.
Oh, and you're feeling kind of blue.
Kind of blue.
And you don't know what to do. You've got a load of troubles on your mind. If you face them with a smile, it'll make your life worthwhile. And you'll find that every now and silver line.
Sing this happy song with me.
Oh!
And just a simple melody.
Oh!
And what those skies above are grey, you can face the world today. If you'll only learn to say,
oh, all together.
When your life is filled with care,
oh,
you will hear it everywhere.
Oh,
though the world may wear a frown. Here's a way to win renown. Tell them as they strap you down. January brings the snow, makes your feet and fingers glow. February's ice and sleet, freeze the toes right off your feet. Welcome March with wintry wind, would thou wert not so unkind. April brings the sweet spring showers, on and on for hours and hours. Farmers fear unkindly May, frost by night and hail by day. June just rains and never stops, 30 days and spoils the crops. In July the sun is hot, is it shining? No, it's not. August cold and dank and wet, brings more rain than any yet. Bleak September's mist and mud is enough to chill the blood. Then October adds a gale, wind and slush and rain and hail. Dark November brings the fog, should not do it to a dog. Freezing wet December then, bloody January again.
Well, there's another splendid tune from England's great heritage of musical rhubarb. Greensleeves, a song we all know and love. Donald knows it and he hates it. Really very interesting how that old tune, Greensleeves, came to be written. I'd like to tell you about it. Are you all sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. 1546, if you'll cast your minds back, was a very bad year for the theatre. Gorba Duck was doing poor business at the Globe. Gamma Gurton was still giving everyone the needle. Apart from Noah's Floody on ice, it's about all there was on. Not even Salad Days and the Mousetrap, you know. No, not even us. Dramatists just seem to have stopped writing. And the master of the King's Revels is getting terribly worried because he had to have a new revel on in time for Candlemas, see, part of his job. So he sent for a playwright friend of his, and he said to him, "Look, kid." That was his name, Kid. "Then how about your writing us another of your little Spanish tragedies or something? I did so enjoy the last one." Kid said, "Well, it's all very well for you, standing there, smoking that potato. Telling people to write plays is not as easy as all that. All the best plots have been used already. Second volume of Holinshed's not out yet. In any case, the public nowadays are only really interested in bear-baiting and cockfighting. Morton's Fork. They don't give a fig for the live theatre." Very angry young man, this kid. Well, the master of the King's Revels sort of calmed him down a bit, you know, as you do, stood him a butt of sack and so on. Said, "Well, we really must try to think of something because it is going to be rather a special occasion. We are nationalizing the monasteries." He said, "If they offer you one, don't take it, because if Bloody Mary gets in, they'll be denationalized." He said, matter of fact, he said, "I have an idea for you." He said, "I know I'm only a civil servant, but you're most welcome to it. Why don't you, may I call you Dost Not Thou? May I thank you? Why dost not thou rewrite Ralph Royster Doister? It is crying out to be done as a musical. Anything to stop it being done straight." But Kid thought this was an absolutely wonderful idea. He rolled about on the floor like old Swan when he's seen a joke. Mind you, by this time, of course, after all this sack, he was tight as Andronicus. He staggered home. He got Well, he got to work on the book straight away, got Skelton in to do the lyrics for him. John Skelton made a first-class job too, wrote dozens of very strong point numbers. King Stephen was a worthy peer, that was one of his. Nay, John, thy porridge is too hot, cha-cha. dozens more. Very funny, very strong, lovely stuff. But none of these songs seem quite right to end the first half. Now, if you're writing a musical, which I'm sure practically all of you are, that is the thing to watch out for, actually, what they call the first half closer. They got to do Ralph Royce to Doister in two halves. You're going to do Royce in the first half, Doister in the second half. Ralph in the interval. And as Skelton said, and he was quite right, for a first half closer, you must have a hit, a palpable hit. Well, they thought of having Summer Is a Coming In. But this had got itself on the banned list. People have been singing Cuckoo rather too lewdly. And he thought, well, what next? There's always the Agincourt Court song, said Skelton, but it's been done to death, hasn't it? It means having all those ghastly old arches. I just can't face it, is it? They're just not... You know, they're not writing songs like those anymore these days. And Kid said, well, leave us not be too hasty. He said, leave us not. Somebody may be somewhere. This chap Anon's writing some perfectly lovely... Nobody seems to know who his agent is. Well, they sat around in the old Bankside Theatre, which they had a short lease, getting more and more depressed and shorter of money. They pawned their doublets, sitting around in their singlets. Those woozies. And suddenly there came the sound of a tucket without. Pausing only to pull down his singlet and tuck it within. Kid rushed to the door and a scroll was handed in by special messenger. Kid took the scroll, unrolled it. It rolled up again. They always did. Unrolled it again. At the bottom were several rows of very square but highly illuminated notes. And at the top it said, green fleas. Kid looked at this. He thought, well, it's a pretty unlikely title for a fong. He handed it over to Skelton and sat back to listen while Skelton tried it over on the virginals. And after listening for a while, Kid said, verily, he said, 'tis a passing melodious roundelay. But you know, I doubt me an it be commercial. Who wrote this green fleaves thing anyway? And a voice from the back of the auditorium shouted out, we did, like that. Scared the doublet and hose off. And they came forward, they could just make out a shadowy figure standing at the back there, and they said, who are you? And the figure answered, and this is the interesting part, almost worth waiting for. The figure answered, we are Henry the Eighth. We are. Well, then, of course, they realized that green sleeves was exactly what they wanted. They put it in the show, and under the title of Doxies Without Smoxies, it ran for years. As you'd expect, with royalty taking interest, like horse racing and so on. In fact, to this very day, in every period play you go to see, though it's set in 1300 up to about 1715, I suppose, still, for incidental music, green sleeves is always played. And the royalties go to royalty. Friend here from outer space and I, we like to go down to the Natural History Museum from time to time, check up on these animals we write about. Every so often he comes over to Kensington, which is a great treat for him, of course. I give him lunch. After lunch he takes me to the museum, which is his treat. Last time I was there I discovered it was free. Also, last time we were there, we noticed something we'd never spotted before. Near the entrance, there's a glass case. And in this glass case, I described the habits of certain climbing plants. Now, this may seem a rather strange subject for a song, but we have written what is perhaps a rather strange song. Anyway, it's called Misalliance.
The fragrant honeysuckle spirals clockwise to the sun, and many other creepers do the same. But some climb anti-clockwise, the bindweed does for one, or convolvulus to give her proper name. Rooted on either side a door, one of each species grew, and raced towards the window ledge above. Each corkscrew to the lintel in the only way it knew, where they stopped, touched tendrils, smiled, and fell in love. Said the right-handed honeysuckle to the left-handed bindweed, oh, let us get married in our parents' stoned mind. We'd be loving and inseparable, inextricably entwined. We'd live happily ever after, said a honeysuckle to the bindweed. To the honeysuckle's parents it came as a shock. The bindweeds, they cried, are inferior stock. They're uncultivated, of breeding bereft. We twine to the right, and they twine to the left. Said the anti-clockwise bindweed to the clockwise honeysuckle, we'd better start saving many a mickle, max a muckle, then run away for a honeymoon and hope that our luck'll take a turn for the better, said the bindweed to the honeysuckle. A bee who was passing remarked to them then, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Consider your offshoots, if offshoots there be. They'll never receive any blessing from me. Poor little sucker, how will it learn when it is climbing which way to turn? Right, left, what a disgrace. Or it may go straight up and fall flat on its face. Said the right-hand thread honeysuckle to the left-hand thread bindweed, it seems that against us all fate has combined. Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my darling Columbine, thou art lost and gone forever, we shall never intertwine. Together they found them the very next day. They had pulled up their roots and just shriveled away. Deprived of that freedom for which we must fight, to veer to the left or to veer to the right.
I would like to sing you now a little Edwardian or Edwardian song. Give me a chance to wear my present, my little Edwardian hat or hort. last year I was given a decanter for my birthday, beautiful thing, cut glass, came from the Portobello Road, in which I keep Madeira, the wine of which I'm extremely fond. Not to excess, of course. That decanter and this hat gave us the idea for this little Edwardian song.
She was young, she was pure, she was new, she was nice, she was fair, she was sweet, 17. He was old, he was violent, no stranger to vice, he was base, he was bad, he was mean. He had slyly inveigled her up to his flat to view his collection of stamps, and he said as he hastened to put out the cat, the wine, his cigar and the lamps, "Up some Madeira, Madeira, you really have nothing to fear. I'm not trying to tempt you, that wouldn't be right. You shouldn't drink spirits at this time of night. Have some Madeira, Madeira, it's a very much nicer than beer. I don't care for sherry, one cannot drink stout, and port is a wine I can well do without. It's simply a case of shackle and arse on gout. Have some Madeira, Madeira." Anna
aware of the wiles of the snake in the grass, of the fate of the maiden who topes. She lowered her standards by raising her glass, her courage, her eyes, and his hopes. She sipped it, she drank it, she drained it, she did. He quietly refilled it again. And he said, as he secretly carved one more notch on the butt of his gold-handled cane, Absa Madeira, Amelia, I've got a small cask of it here. And once it's been opened, you know it won't keep. Do finish it up. It will help you to sleep. Absa Madeira, Amelia. It's a really an excellent year. Now, if it were gin, you'd be wrong to say yes. The evil gin does would be hard to assess. Besides, it's inclined to affect me prowess. Absa Madeira, Amelia. There flashed through her mind what her mother had said with her antepenultimate breath. Oh, my child, should you look on the wine when 'tis red, be prepared for a fate worse than death. She let go her glass with a shrill little cry. Crash, tinkle, it fell to the floor. When he asked what in heaven, she made no reply, up her mind and a dash for the door. Absa Madeira, my dear, rang out down the hall, loud and clear, a tremulous cry that was filled with despair as she bore to take breath in the cool midnight air. Absa Madeira, my dear, the words seemed to ring in her ear. Until the next morning, she woke up in bed with a smile on her lips and an ache in her head.
And a beard in her ear, all that tickled and said, Absa Madeira, Amelia.
Now, you really have been tremendously nice. We do thank you. Posterity will be proud of you. And perhaps you'd like to help us even more now by joining in the last chorus of this next song. Don't have to if you don't want to, you know, if it embarrasses you. Would be rather a pity if you don't sing tonight, I think, because tonight, by way of encouragement, attendants will be passing among you with rawhide whips. This is one of the first songs that Donald and I ever wrote together. It turned out to be a very lucky day for us.
Oh, most fortunate by that time.
Certainly was, isn't it? Today, of course, is also another rather splendid day. Today is the 50th anniversary of that marvellous day when Aloykin, the Russian chess master, played King's Pawn to Knight 7th. This caused quite a stir as they were playing bridge at the time. But in honour of this, and because I can't think of any other way to get around it, Donald is going to sing the second chorus of this song in Russian. This is the very first of the animal songs. Some people think the title of this song is irrelevant. But it's not irrelevant. It's a hippopotamus.
A bone hippopotamus was standing one day on the banks of the cool Shalimar. He gazed at the bottom as it peacefully lay by the light of the evening star. Away on a hilltop sat combing her hair his fair hippopotamine maid. The hippopotamus was no ignoramus and sang her this sweet serenade. Mud, mud, glorious mud, nothing quite like it for cooling the blood. So follow me, follow, down to the hollow, and there let us wallow in glorious mud. The fair hippopotamus he aimed to entice from her seat on that hilltop above. As she hadn't got a ma to give her advice, came tiptoeing down to her love. Like thunder, the forest re-echoed the sound of the song that they sang as they met. His inamorata adjusted her garter and lifted her voice in duet in Russian.
Gräz, gräz, чудная гряз, лучше средства, как кожная вас. Так возьми свою даму.
Follow me, follow.
И поведи ее в яму.
Down to the hollow.
И там мы окунемся в чудную гряз.
There to improve our cultural relations.
Now, oh, hippopotami began to speak on the banks of that river so wide.
I wonder now what am I to say of the scene that ensued by the Shalimar side. They dived all at once with an ear-splitting splosh, then rose to the surface again.
A regular army of hippopotami all singing this haunting refrain.
That's you. We had to look outside during the interval, see if our car's all right. It's getting a bit old. Had to be tested soon. You know, they started these tests for 10-year-old cars. They brought it down to 6, now 5. I think you bring it down to 3. There's even been some talk of having them tested before they leave the factories. But I'm... nearly November the 5th, my goodness. We can always tell. Swan pushed me up the road. We got 1 and 6 pence, all in copper. Well, we start off with a very old French folk tune. It's called All Gaul. And it'll be sung in 3 parts. Yves de Gaulle.
This old man, he played one. He played knick-knack at Verdun. Cognac, Armagnac, Burgundy and Bone. This old man came rolling home. This old man, World War II. He told Churchill what to do. 3 French General Crosses of Lorraine. He came rolling home again. This old man, he played trois. Vive la France, c'est moi. Jim Crack governments, call me if you please. Colombey les deux églises. This old man, he played 4. Choose de Gaulle or civil war. Come back, president, come by decree. Referendum, wee, wee, wee. This old man, he played 5. France is safe, I'm still alive. Plastique, Pompidou, sing the Marseillaise. Algérie n'est pas française. This old man, he played 6. France and England, they don't mix. I tied Benelux, Germany and me. That's my market recipe. This old man set a wheat. NATO, give me back my fleet. And an hour ratified a bomb. One old man goes on and on. This old man, 9 and 10. He'll play Nick till God knows when. Cognac, Armagnac, Burgundy and Bone. This old man thinks he's St. Joan.
Down with the French-speaking Walloons and freedom for Flanders. That's what I say. It's where my forebears came from, you know. Well, 3 of them, anyway. Who's been sleeping in my porridge? Well, now I think we should leave the fantasy world of the news with all its fabulous fictional characters like Marylebone Rice Pudding and Screaming Lord Hume, hooray! And that well-known topical comedy team of Dimple Knees and Son. They don't really exist, you know, any more than the Bishop of Woolwich really exists. It's just an idea in the mind of God. No, they make them... They make them up, you know. They have to do something, fill up the pages of the newspapers and so on. I mean, we know perfectly well that if there's no newspapers, I mean, if there's a strike or a public holiday or something, nothing happens. It's marvellous. Oh, tempora, o mores, o times, o daily mirror. As Lord Denning said in his report, he said, none of this going around saying no smoke without fire. Nil combustibus pro fumo. No. I think we should, it's great fun, this whimsical world of current affairs. It's a bit limited, I think, you know. I mean, you wouldn't want a whole evening of it, would you? But I think we should get back to real life now. The things we see around us every day, like the sky at night, for example.
Swan has a song on this very subject, a short song, but nonetheless nauseating.
Well, be that as it may, this song is called My Horoscope.
Jupiter's passed through Orion and come into conjunction with Mars. Saturn is wheeling through infinite space to its preordained place in the stars. And I gaze at the planets in wonder at the trouble and time they expend, all to warn me to be careful in dealings involving a friend.
That's more the sort of length I was thinking of, really. What is your zodiacal sign, anyway, my good chap?
I think I'm a Libra.
Libra, son of a book, are you, my goodness. I always thought of you... yes. Thought of you more as Aquarius, really, the man who carries the can, you
know. And my hat.
Yes, I'm a Pisces myself, two fishes swimming in opposite directions. Very uncomfortable that can be, too. This song is a ballad of unending domestic upheaval. I'm sure you've all had something of the same experience. It's called The Gas Man Cometh.
'Twas on a Monday morning, the gas man came to call. The gas tap wouldn't turn, I wasn't getting gas at all. He tore out all the skirting boards to try and find the main, and I had to call a carpenter to put them back again. Oh, it all makes work for the working man to do.
Was on the Tuesday morning, the carpenter came round. He hammered and he chiseled and he said,
"Look what I found. Your joists are full of dry rot, but I'll put them all to rights."
Then he nailed right through a cable, and out went all the lights.
Makes work for the working man to do.
Was on a Wednesday morning, the electrician came. He called me Mr. Sanderson, which isn't quite my name. He couldn't reach the fuse box without standing on the bin,
and his foot went through a window, so I called the glazier in. Though it all makes work for the working man to do.
Was on the Thursday morning, the glazier came along with his blowtorch and his putty and his merry glazier song. He put another pane in, it took no time at all,
but I had to get a painter in to come and paint the wall. Oh, it all makes work for the working man to do. Was on a Friday morning, the painter made a start
with undercoats
and overcoats.
He painted every part,
every nook and every cranny. But I found when he was gone, he painted over the gas tap and I couldn't turn it on.
Oh,
it's work for the working man to do. On Saturday and Sunday, they do no work at all. So it was on the Monday morning that the gas man came to call.
We now turn to number two on your song sheets. Don't strain your eyes trying to read them, though, because I shall be telling you exactly what comes next. In any case, these rather fanciful titles that we print on the programme bear no relation to what we're going to sing. It's a dead waste of a shilling, as far as you know. Don't even get green stamps, either. Well worth collecting those stamps, my goodness. You know, that really is a very nice suit. What you wear and where you live, the right label and the right address, is really only part of this desperate chasing after social status, which is driving so many of us to the very brink of neurosis. It has, in fact, been calculated that in this country alone, over 30% are subclinically neurotic, or as a psychiatrist would say, stark staring bonkers. Over 30%, just think, that's every third person. Happily, there's only two of us. This song is about status symbols. It's called Sounding Brass.
Society frowns on blowing one's own trumpet. Oh, for goodness sake, would you believe it? But we found a game that merits no rebuke.
If someone's got a tub, we're gonna thump it.
It's more fun than playing polo with the Duke.
The object is to Gunga Din your neighbour.
I'm a better man than use the acid test. So man the good ship one up, let's do a social ton up, and bang our status symbols with the best. 2, 3, 4, playing on the status symbols, laying out the ready cash. Bigger, better, newer, smarter, here the status symbols clash.
My phone number's ex-directory, should you wish to make a call.
Mine is even more exclusive.
More exclusive?
I won't have a phone at all. You can always try cabling me, Mick Flan, England.
I have colour television, though it can't receive a thing.
I've a midget tape recorder hidden in my signet ring, hidden in my signet ring. I'm a laundress, comes in daily to my flat in Marble Arch.
Oh, my laundress flown to Cairo.
Flown to Cairo?
Where they don't use so much starch. I believe my butler's butler has appeared on Face to Face.
I lost both my Botticellis when they robbed my country place.
I've been asked to sing at Salzburg in next year's Fidelio.
I've been asked to screen Lord Denning for security, you know. My car registration number's 1111 VIP.
All my garage doors fly open when I murmur sesame.
My car horn goes ah-eh-ah-eh, your car horn goes ah-ah-ah.
I've just bought a Mini Super.
All of what?
The Mini Super.
Oh, yes, I've got one in my boots. Playing on the status symbols, laying out the ready cash. Bigger, better, newer, smarter, here the status symbols clash.
Hell has just been taken over by a friend of Charlie Claus. We've acquired a private furnace. Bigger, hotter, far than yours.
It has long been my earnest wish to improve the standard of the music we have in these shows of ours.
Thank you very much.
Not at all, my dear sir.
I think you know that nobody has a higher opinion of your work than you do yourself. I simply meant we should have some more good music. And to this end, I have been practicing the horn, or French horn, as they call it. German horn, as the French call it, not to be confused with the cor anglais. It's a marvellous instrument. I took it up because I very much wanted to play the music of Mozart, in particular his wonderful horn concerto in E-flat, Kirchel rating 495, which he wrote at the age of about 18 months. He's a marvellous man. I practiced it very hard against considerable opposition, I may say, and I had hoped this evening to give you the very first performance of the last movement, the Rondo Allegro Vivace. Owing to curious circumstances as yet unexplained, I am not able to do this. I can only tell you why. I once had a whim and I had to obey it, to buy a French horn in a second-hand shop. I polished it up and I started to play it, in spite of the neighbors who begged me to stop. Sound my horn, I had to develop my embouchure. I found my horn was a bit of a devil to play, so artfully wound to give you a sound, a beautiful sound, so rich and round. Oh, the hours I had to spend before I mastered it in the end. But that was yesterday, and just today I looked in the usual place. There was the case, but the horn itself was missing. Where can it have gone? Haven't you? Hasn't anyone seen my horn? Where can it have gone? What a blow! Now I know I'm unable to play my Allegro. Who swiped that horn? I bet you a quip somebody did. Knowing I found a concerto and wanted to play it, afraid of my talent at playing the horn. For early to date, my utter dismay, it had vanished away like the dew in the morn. Tooting.
lost that horn. I know I was using it yesterday. I've lost that horn. Lost that horn. Found that horn. Gone. There's not a joke to be. I fittingly pay a reward. I know some hearty folk whose party jokes pretending to hunt with the corn. Gone away, gone away. Was it one of them took it away? Will you kindly return that horn? Oh, where is the devil who pinched my horn? I shall tell the police I want that French horn back. I miss its music more and more and more. Without that horn, I'm feeling sad and so forlorn. I found a concerto and wanted to play it this way. I challenged to play the horn, but early today, to my utter dismay, it had totally vanished away. To play it, but somebody took it away. I practiced the horn and was longing to play it, but somebody took it away. My neighbor's asleep in his bed. I'll soon make him wish he were dead. I'll take up the tuba instead. Wah, wah.
Thank you very much. I should warn you, he wrote two more in E flat alone. Next time we'll take the festival hall. One of the great problems of the world today is undoubtedly this problem of not being able to talk to scientists because we don't understand science. They can't talk to us because they don't understand anything else, poor dears. This problem, I think it was C.P. Snow first raised it, Sir Charles Snow in private life, in his books Science and Government and so on. Mind you, I haven't read it. I'm waiting for the play to come. He says quite rightly, he said it's no good going up to a scientist and saying to him as you would to anybody else, you know, good morning, how are you, lend me a quid and so on. I mean, you just glare at you or make a rude retort or something. No, you have to speak to him in language that he'll understand. I mean, you go up to him, you say something like, H2SO4, Professor. Don't synthesize anything I wouldn't synthesize. and the reciprocal of pi to your good wife. Now, this he will understand. Snow says that nobody can consider themselves educated who doesn't know at least the basic language of science. I mean, things like Sir Edward Boyle's law, for example. The greater the external pressure, the greater the volume of hot air. The simple... Or the second law of thermodynamics. This is very important. I was somewhat shocked the other day to discover that my partner not only doesn't know the second law, he doesn't even know the first law of thermodynamics. Going back to first principles, very briefly, thermodynamics, of course, is derived from two Greek words, thermos, meaning hot, if you don't drop it, and dynamics, meaning dynamic work. And thermodynamics is simply the science of heat and work and the relationships between the two. As laid down in the laws of thermodynamics, which may be expressed in the following simple terms, after me, Don. The first law of thermodynamics. Heat is work, and work is heat.
Heat is work, and work is heat.
Very good. The second law of thermodynamics. Heat cannot of itself pass from one body to a hotter body.
Heat cannot of itself pass from one body to a hotter body.
Heat won't pass from a cooler to a hotter.
Heat won't pass from a cooler to a hotter.
You can try it if you like, but you'd far better not.
You can try it if you like, but you'd far better not.
Cause the cold in the cooler will get hotter as a ruler.
Cause the cold in the cooler will get hotter as a ruler.
Because the hotter body's heat will pass to the cooler.
Cause the hotter body's heat will pass to
first
the cooler.
Heat is work, and work is heat, and work is heat, and heat is work. Heat will pass by conduction.
Heat will pass by convection.
Heat will pass by convection.
Heat will pass by
radiation.
Heat will pass by radiation.
And that's a physical law. Heat is work, and work's a curse.
and all the heat in the universe is gonna cool down. Because it can't increase, then there'll be no more work and there'll be perfect peace.
Really?
Yeah, that's entropy, man. All because of the second law of thermodynamics, which lays down that you can't pass heat from a cooler to a hotter. Try it if you like, you far better
mind. Because the cold in the cooler will get hotter as a ruler. Because the hotter body's heater will pass to the whole room.
You can't pass heat from a cooler to a hotter. You try it if you like, but you'll only look a fool. Because the cold in the cooler will get hotter as a ruler. That's a physical law. Oh, I'm hot.
Hot? That's because you've been working.
Oh, Beatles, nothing.
That's the first and second law of thermodynamics.
You're often asked. Sometimes asked. Somebody asked me once. Why don't you write a song about flying? It's not a bad idea, really. Swan and I have had to do quite a lot of flying lately by air. I must say, it's rather marvellous when you think of it, isn't it, that, you know, if you want to go to New York, say, instead of just lying about for days on end, like in a sort of floating Selfridges, doing nothing, eating far too much, all you have to do is just jump on a plane 17 miles outside London at 2 o'clock in the morning. You can be in New York too late for breakfast and just in time to go to bed at noon. It doesn't take your physical body more than about a week to catch up with this. No, as the airlines say nowadays, you know, flying is very, very safe. It is actually calculated it is safer to fly than it is to cross the road. Mind you, I gave that up years ago where I live, in Kensington, near the air terminal. They have these airline buses whizzing about, you know. I think the drivers have instructions to keep the statistics favourable. Companies do anything to put you at your ease, whether it is our own BO Airways Corporation or Air Linctus or any of those, right from the moment when they send you your ticket, often as much as 6 hours before you're due to leave. And it says on it that you are entitled to 20 kilos of free baggage. There's a wonderful international ring about it, kilos, you know. You can always get down your log rules and slide tables and find out that this is, in fact, about 44 pounds, give or take an Oz. I always like to weigh everything before I go, and I on my scales. But they only weigh up to 10 pounds. They're marked in scruples. But I weigh everything, including the cases, and it usually comes to about 40 pounds. Put the things into the cases. 50 pounds. Can you explain? It's the only example where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Swan doesn't bother, actually, do you?
No, really.
So just push anything. When we came back from Toronto,
oh, yes.
He had 125 pounds excess baggage. In the end, we had to leave her behind. Lovely girl, known locally as La Belle Dame Sans Merci. The beautiful lady who never says thank you. Anyway, off to the airport, and you know you're nearly there because you see this big notice saying, beware low-flying aircraft. There's not a lot you can do about that. You know, take your hat off. Then you go in. Go into the lounge and you sit down and a man comes up and tells you that you are on the advanced flight, which sounds marvellous, till you find out it means you've got to wait for another 4 hours. There's always a good reason for this. Either the plane has been held up in Beirut by some band of marauding riffs, or there's a wind over the Atlantic, something they haven't quite tumbled to yet. What they do on the Air Ministry roof, I do not know. Or else it's an untraced electrical fault, which means they can't find the radio operator. You sit there, you go on waiting there, you know, if you haven't had smallpox, and filling in your landing card next door to this big machine saying, insure your life for £250, you know. Loss of both limbs, half price. Until finally you hear a voice through the loudspeaker saying, so you do that. It's all
all aboard the mystery bus tour, and off we go to the middle of the field. They're very helpful about this, because I have a particular problem about this, you know, getting up this very steep gangway with the wheelchair and so on. So they're very nice, they're very helpful. They find out exactly which gangway is nearest to my seat, and then they take me up the other one. Actually, do them justice, last time they took me up through the kitchen entrance on a forklift. Very stately, you know, like this. Why they need a great machine like that just to lift forks, I... So you... Well, they're only made of plastic, aren't they? Well, you go in and you find your seat and you sit down and you stop smoking and you fasten your safety belt. And you take your hand baggage out of the hand baggage rack and put it on the floor. They're very particular about this. And then a very nice lady comes and tells you what to do when you come down in the water, and what to do when you stop breathing, and finally it's time to go. And it chocks away, and they start up the engines, you know, shh, and the whole plane starts to shake like this. It's like a cat after a pigeon, you know. But I'm never worried, because I know that every tiny part of this great machine is a miracle of modern engineering. Then the ashtray falls off. Oh. You know, it's a curious thing. I don't know if you ever thought of this, but England hasn't really got a national song. You know, just for England. There's plenty for Great Britain, but that's quite different. You have to be very careful how you use those terms, too. The rule is, if we've done anything good, it's another triumph for Great Britain. And if we haven't, it's England loses again. Have you noticed that? All the others, they got songs about their countries, you know, the Scots, like Scotland for I, or for me, as it should more properly be. And the Welsh and the Irish have got songs saying how marvellous they are, making rude remarks about the English in their own languages. In the case of the Welsh, I think this is the pot calling the saucepan fach. What English national song have we got? Jerusalem. There'll always be an England. Well, that's not saying much, is it? I mean, there'll always be a North Pole. Some dangerous clown doesn't go and melt it. No, I think the reason for this is that in the old days, you know, the good old days when I was a boy, we didn't bother in England about nationalism. I mean, nationalism was on its way out. We got pretty well everything we wanted. And we didn't go around saying how marvellous we were. Everybody knew that. Any more than we bothered to put our names on our stamps. I mean, there's only two kinds of stamps. English stamps, insets, at the beginning of the album, foreign stamps, all mixed up at the other. any gibbon could tell you that. But nowadays, nationalism is on the up and up, and everybody has a national song but us. Americans have national songs, like My Country, 'Tis of Thee, which they sing to the tune of God Save the Queen, I may say, and which, together with their long-range forecasting of our weather, I find hard to forgive. Yes. The Germans, whatever you say about the Germans, and who doesn't? They marvellous. What a marvellous song that was. German, German overalls. Now there's a song. Well, the moment has come, and none too soon. We have a song here. We have a song here which I think fills this long-felt what, and I hope that all true-born English men and women in our audience will join in the last chorus. And if you don't have the good fortune to be English true-born, or a man or a woman, I hope you'll join in as an ordinary mark of simple, decent respect. This song starts with, I think, very typical English understatement.
The English, the English, the English are best. I wouldn't give tuppence for all of the rest. The rottenest bits of these islands of ours we've left in the hands of three unfriendly powers. Examine the Irishman, Welshman or Scot, you'll find he's a stinker as likely as not.
Okay, while we're on Edinburgh Festival.
The Scotsman is mean, as we're all well aware, and bony and blotchy and covered with hair. He eats salted porridge, he works all the day, and he hasn't got bishops to show him the way. The English, the English, the English are best. I wouldn't give tuppence for all of the rest.
Bar hit me old mother over the head with a shillelagh.
The Irishman now our contempt is beneath. He sleeps in his boots and he lies in his teeth.
He blows up policemen, or so I have heard, and blames it on Cromwell and William III. The English are noble, the English are nice, and worth any other at double the price. Oh, yachida! The Welshman's dishonest, he cheats when he can, and little and dark, more like monkey than man. He works underground with a lamp in his hat, and he sings far too loud, far too often, and flat. And crossing the channel, one cannot say much, for the French or the Spanish, the Danish or Dutch. The Germans are German, the Russians are red, and the Greeks and Italians eat garlic in bed. The English are moral, the English are good, and clever, and modest, and misunderstood. And all the world over, each nation's the same, and they've simply no notion of playing the game. They argue with umpires, they cheer when they've won, and they practice beforehand, which ruins the fun. The English are best, so up with the English and down with the rest. It's not that they're wicked or naturally bad. It's knowing they're foreign that makes them so mad. For all the English are all that a nation should be, and the flower of the English are Donald, Michael, and me.
Given the slightest encouragement, we like to end up with another one. This is some more news of our old friend, the hippopotamus.
The amorous hippopotamus, whose love song we know, is now married and father of 10. He murmurs, God rot 'em, as he watches them grow, and he longs to be single again. He'll gamble no more on the banks of the Nile, which Nasser is flooding next spring. With hippopotamus in silken pajamas, no more will he teach them to sing that tune.
My, my glorious son, nothing but my hippopotamus in the pan, so far before.
Song here, more or less, is a postscript. It's about something. Well, it's not really an animal, but it's certainly very much more than a mere vegetable. I refer, of course, to that fantastic, newly discovered hybrid, the wampum. If you have not yet heard of this fabulous new raw material, and it is, I'm proud to say, the discovery of a British scientist, a Professor Werner von Lebensraum, let us tell you something about the wampum and the factory in which it's turned into everything you could possibly want. Factory noises coming up.
You can do such a lot with a wampum. You can use every part of it too. For work or for pleasure, it's a triumph, it's a treasure. Oh, there's nothing that a wampum cannot do.
Now the thread from the coat of a wampum,
the thread,
has the warmth and the resilience of wool.
Just like wool.
You need never wash or brush it.
It's impossible to crush it.
And it shimmers like the finest sort of tulle.
So our clothes are all made from the wampum. Model gown spots wear lingerie.
Going up.
They are waterproof and plastic.
Where it's needed and elastic.
And they emphasize the figure as you see.
Hail to the blithe wampum. Hail to the old plant. All providing wampum. Universal art.
You can shave with the rind of a wampum.
Really?
And it acts as a soapless shampoo.
And the root in little doses keeps you free from halitosis.
Oh, so there's nothing
that a wampum cannot do. Nothing that a wampum cannot do.
Nothing that a wampum cannot do.
Now the thick inner shell of a wampum.
Change key.
You can mould with a finger and thumb. Though soft when you began it, it'll set as hard as granite, and it's quite as light as aluminium.
So we make what we like from the wampum, and that proves very useful indeed. From streets full of houses, the buttons on your trousers, with a wampum you have everything you need.
Gaudiamus wampum, gladly we salute. Body make of wampum,
philanthropic fruit.
Oh, the thin outer leaf of a wampum
out
makes the finest Havana cigar.
And its bottom simply bristles with unusual looking thistles, but we haven't yet discovered what they are.
You can do such a lot with a wampum. You can use every part of it too. For a work or for pleasure, it's a triumph, it's a treasure. Oh, there's nothing that a wampum cannot do.
Oh, the flesh in the heart of a wampum has the flavor of porterhouse steak, and the juice is a liquor that will get you higher quicker, and you'll still lit up next morning when you wake.
Wampum, let your voices ring.
Wampum, evermore we sing. To record what is what in a wampum needs a book twice as big as Who's Who. I could tell you more and more about this fascinating fora. You can shape it, you can square it, you can drape it, you can wear it, you can ice it, you can dice it, you can pair it, you can slice it. Oh, there's nothing that a wampum cannot do. Nothing that a wampum cannot do. Nothing that a wampum cannot do.